from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Jeffrey Jones.
And today this podcast is going to break every rule that I have systematically laid out for myself over the past 6 years, which is don't record with a crappy microphone, don't do things half-assed, have notes prepared, have topics to discuss. Every single rule, I just tossed it right out the motherfucking window. So that is your warning or whatever you call it.
I don't know if you can qualify this as an incentive. This is your incentive to madness.
Exactly. I'm trying to emphasize this show as much as possible. I want to discourage you from listening, because if you listen on and you're like, wow, this show was weird, I didn't get it, then you know what? It wasn't meant for you. Why did you keep listening? I told you at the beginning, this show is breaking all the rules. We're actually just trying a shitload of new shit for reasons that I want in the future to seem like they were, you know, I was thinking ahead.
Well,
and
you have
a brilliant and a way of breaking through the mold when it really wasn't just like, I think my microphone's fucked and everything's busted.
You have a year to come up with a bullshit story. This is the first show of the year. Nobody's going to remember it. It's going to be like this. They're going to be like, it's going to be that one episode that just kind of ties them over.
Oh, yeah, definitely. This is also the show that's going to drive your cats crazy, by the way, if you have cats.
Oh, because of the noise?
Yeah, in the background. See, here's the thing. The doves have had another egg that we're going to need to have an abortion with. So we're going to need to abort another one of their babies.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's like abortion casserole.
That's right. Maybe what they're doing right now.
Or an omelet, I guess.
They're saying, oh, no, please, bird god, don't let the big giant monkey kill our baby. No. It's going to happen.
That sucks. So what do? Like, flush it down the toilet, or...?
What you do is you rub a little bit of soap on it.
Aw. God, now that's a downer.
Can you hold on a second? I'm going to get him to really shut up. Hold on a second.
Okay. I don't even know if Jacob's going to cut this out of the podcast. It'll just be like an intimate moment between Jeff and the fans. Hi, fans. I'm Jeff. You probably don't remember me if you're new. I used to be on the show all the time. Then I found Jesus. And I've never been the same. Jesus is awesome.
Ah, there we go.
Welcome back. I don't know if you're gonna
peace and quiet. Yeah.
I couldn't actually hear them. So
that's all I could hear.
I also told all your viewers I found Jesus. So if you don't edit it out, it's gonna be a weird incongruous statement in the middle of the podcast.
I haven't made that decision. It really depends on how things go. I have a strong inclination towards the editing these days, but at the same time, like I said, this is a break all the rules show.
Yeah, but I also don't know if you want to push the envelope. Like, we're just going to have radio silence for a good 40 seconds in this podcast.
Well, the difference will be that everyone who listens will know what my conclusions will be.
Oh, is this part going to be in the podcast, though?
That's itself another good question. I don't know. It really depends on what future Jacob decides.
This is like the clue of podcasts.
Yeah. How do you try to predict what you're going to do in the future? And, you know, you might think it's a lot easier to, you know, but it's not. It really isn't, because you change all the fucking time, too, right?
I'm just saying, for dead silence is probably a good idea to get out of the podcast.
All right, but...
But I haven't been in the podcast game for very long, so
right.
I don't know.
But
I don't know all your rules.
In general, what we're going to be talking about is we're just going to have random topics. I'm probably going to be talking, have monologues of things that have been popping in and out of my head. And it's just going to be completely off the cuff, two friends talking to each other right after the new year. Happy New Year, Jeff.
Happy New Year to you as well, and to all our lovely visitors.
I can't believe we're still here.
I know. Wait, is this a 2012 thing or just an atheist podcast surviving this long thing?
No, 2012 thing.
Okay.
We already covered the whole, is the atheist podcast going to survive thing. 2013 is the year where I have to pull out two rabbits out of my hat.
Okay. And you don't believe in magic, so... fucked.
Well, the thing about pulling rabbits out of hats is it doesn't involve magic so much as it's trickery.
So you're going to trick the audience. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. I'm going to trick you into thinking that I have sufficient skills to complete a book and do it well, and the sufficient skills to be able to compile an audio DVD. And this is not good proof, by the way. This very show
is, yeah, but this is
already poor proof.
Yes, but this show doesn't make the cut. Right?
You're asking me to predict what future Jake is going to do?
Listen.
I choose to, as of this moment, I don't even know what's going to be in the DVD ultimate. Maybe even the show that we decided to just throw all the rules out of the window, maybe the best show or the worst show, or I don't know what. But please, stop making me make decisions for future Jake. I don't want to do it no more.
You have to decide.
I don't want to be the decider.
The future of atheism depends on this decision. You can't let us all down.
Well, there's been at least some interesting things that I've discovered from past couple of days of doing marketing research on the DVD.
All right.
And the first one is that everybody so far really likes my editing, so I didn't pull a George Lucas on any of the shows. So that's really, that is encouraging. That's nice. That's the first thing.
So you didn't destroy the original podcast trying to give us this remastered version?
Exactly. Like, I didn't put in some kind of rah, 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 I'm a CG effect kind of thing.
I love that. Like, a CG Ryan in all of our podcasts. And, like, I'm just checked in to decide, hey, everybody, in the middle of a podcast.
What I basically did is I just made the pace of everything speed up. Like, because we have a certain particular pace, and that's fine in a conversational tone. But if you actually speed it up, it sounds like it's a comedy routine.
I find that a lot of times when I'm on this show, I think I'm the guy who discredits the entire show. Because I'm like the guy who's the least informed, and I just talk shit and make jokes. Like,
yeah, but that's exactly what people like about the show. Somebody would say, hey, what is your show about? Talking shit and making jokes. That's nothing wrong with that, okay? There's actually a bunch of really great things about that. You want to know what's really great about talking shit and making fun and laughing about stuff?
It's revenge for all my high school bullying?
No. I actually think that it is kind of the essential cure for violence. Either physical or it be, emotional or whatever, humor is the best way to destroy all violence.
I could agree. I would agree with that. The whole laughing through a graveyard kind of thing, making people laugh. I agree with that.
Yeah. There's a couple of weird phenomena that make me think that is actually a strange evolution of violence in and of itself. Okay. First and foremost, we laugh hardest when people get hurt. So there's an amount of abuse and violence towards another person in humor. So let's not deny it. The second reason is also because there's the baring of teeth when you laugh, which is something that normally happens when you're indicating that you're about to attack. And the third is that people who are fundamentally frightened, like to the point of horror, often break into laughter, maybe as a way of triggering that mechanism and making that person more likely to survive a violent attack. So I think it actually evolutionarily is very much the fucking panacea of violence in all of its forms. And the best way to actually take cultural idioms that are backwards and horrible, throw them in people's faces, and allow people to just discard them through humor. So I'm trying to give what you're doing a really polish. Did I polish that turd?
You polished the shit out of turd. I'm like, I feel I'm saving the world by doing this.
You feel inspired is what you're saying.
I think if I didn't do this podcast, we wouldn't have January 3rd.
You saved the world.
I saved the world, and all we're asking is what, $5 membership?
$5 a month.
$5 a month to keep the world to keep the world alive.
Right, the prayer circle or whatever the equivalent is. We've got to find some other something that needs to be sustained constantly that requires a lot of money and people not asking questions about whatever that is.
For the price of one Starbucks coffee a day, you can keep Good Atheist alive.
Well, I'm not even asking that much, man. A day, shit.
That's true, man. It's like, Lord. Freaking Starbucks, and their coffee's not even that good. It's really not.
Depends on who you ask, okay? It is still the fastest growing franchise in the world. Because it is a drug, okay?
It's a drug. I bet you we could make a chart correlating Mac users and Starbucks drinkers.
Oh, yeah?
I bet you there's a correlation.
Their success does seem to be really...
with the little hipster, like, yeah. I need my Mac to do Photoshop, people.
I need to be in a copy shop to look like I'm working and writing.
There we go, exactly. Frickin' Apple.
Let me tell you, this is the weird thing, okay? I'm like, as a person who writes, I gotta tell you, the person who goes out to write, what are you writing out there? It's really noisy, hard to concentrate. Writing is typically a pretty private thing.
I try to draw sometimes in public, not in public, but like at a cafe or something, just because it's a change of scenery, but it never, like, I always get a wobbly table, and it's like, people are always looking at what you're doing. It's like, mind your business. Like, you know, I don't look at you reading the paper, or, you know, not reading the paper so much as doing Sudoku.
But you know what the assumption is? The assumption is if a person's doing art, and they're out, they don't mind that art being seen, which isn't necessarily a bad assumption. There's tons of artists.
No, but it's just that in sometimes, like, for me, as an example, it's like, I have a hard time multitasking right now. So, like, it's like I just get out to, you know, get away from the house, and then it's like I'm working, and then it's like all of a sudden I realize if I'm not sitting in a corner or something that people are looking at what I'm doing, and then they want to have a conversation. Even though I have the, like, fuck off headphones on, like, at full blast, it's like,
you
hey.
You need a shirt that says fuck off. Maybe.
I don't want to be an active jerk. I just want to be passive jerk.
Oh,
you know?
Want to be jerk on your time?
No, not on my time. I want to be a jerk that doesn't, I'm not in your face about it. I'm just like, look, if I had a cloak of invisibility, things would be good. I just wear it over me and my desk and my drawing table.
So what you're saying is you need the noise of these ants, but that their interaction with you bothers you.
Something like that, yeah. I want to carry. Maybe I should just be in a fishbowl that I can lug around. Well, not a fishbowl, some kind of one-way mirror dome.
Oh God, that's really what you want?
I don't know.
You want to live in a dome?
Well, I don't want to live in the dome. I just want to be able to take this dome with me when I want to draw at a cafe.
I'm sure you look forward to the day when they have some kind of shield. Yeah, well, violent repellent. Hey, hi, what are you drawing? No.
I would love, like, some kind of small talk detector. Like, small talk inhibitor. Like, it's like a little chip that you have on your jacket or something, on your lapel. And when someone starts making small talk, they just get, like, a citrus spray in the face.
Now, I'm pretty sure that if you had, say, Professor Xavier's power from the X-Men, all you would do is make sure that as soon as a person turns to say hi, like, they just don't see you anymore, huh? What? You eliminate them from their mind, you're just like, leave me alone. I just want to observe you.
Yeah, there we go. The problem is I don't trust myself with that kind of power. I'd probably do something worse. I'd be like, their heads would melt.
What? That's where
Why
you
not?
Go? That's the first word. That's the first place. I thought maybe you'd toy around by saying, I would read people's inner thoughts, you know.
Actually, that would be really cool. And it's like I'm drawing, and then I read the person's mind, and I just all of a sudden start drawing what they're thinking.
You know, I want the power not to actually influence in any way, but just out of curiosity of what other human minds sound like. I mean, do they sound like mine? Are they organized and structured the same way that mine are structured? They have common habits? I don't know. I'm curious.
I've often wondered, and I'm pretty sure the answer is obvious, but I've often... If you're listening to someone think in a different language, like, are they thinking in that language? They must be.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely. I can say that there are times where if I speak French enough, I'll be thinking in French. And so, it's just talking French a lot easier.
So let's say you're someone who doesn't have any language skills. Let's say not a baby, but, like, you're someone, like, you know, who just doesn't know a language. What do you think? Do you just think like an animal?
No. Well, basically what they found is that people have language instincts, right? That you have a kind of part of your brain that understands grammar, and that you would create your own form, and I think they're called pidgins usually, and that a language could essentially evolve. I mean, imagine that there's an evolutionary force that is so strong for you to develop a language that you could take a whole bunch of human beings, isolate them somewhere, make them forget fucking language, and wait two generations, and you'll already have people arguing about whether or not something should be grammatically one way or another.
That would be wonderful. You'd have to give them faith.
Grammar Nazis after three generations.
I would say two. Being a grammar Nazi is the easiest thing in the world.
No, but being a grammar Nazi is probably itself a kind of evolutionary development, right? Someone there trying to sustain the language because so trying to inhibit its own development and evolution.
Well, I mean, I can't understand the evolutionary benefit of being a grammar Nazi. Because, I mean, obviously, if you're correcting someone, then you know what they wanted to say, so you're just doing it to be a dick. Like, you don't have to, you know, like, it's like when I was younger, I used to correct your double negatives all the time. And it's like, I knew what you meant, but I was just saying it to be pedantic. Like, what purpose does that serve?
I know there is that element, but I want to just sort of step as to outside of the petty reasons why people do things, and we're going to polish that turd.
All right, we should have like a theme song for that. Doesn't John Stewart have like a little polish that turd segment?
He does. We should come up with our own kind of thing. But yeah, I can't think of what that is going to be right now. But let me polish that one a little bit.
All right.
Let's try to justify that. Okay, so let's review.
I review. Okay, let's go.
Okay, no, you review. Review your argument that I'm trying to polish.
Review your argument?
No, you're trying. Okay.
Oh, okay. My argument is that being pedantic about grammar and being a grammar Nazi doesn't really benefit society in any real meaningful way. It just makes you a jerk.
Okay, so now I'm going to polish that one.
Okay.
So let's stop imagining all of the stuff that we write today from the perspective of us needing it for some future time, but let's imagine what we're writing today for some future anthropologist who has to study human behavior. Now, if you try to read some of the, like, older writings in English, it's tough to read, right? You're like, what the fuck does he mean? I don't know what this word is. The grammar looks a little bit weird. I don't understand why there's so many E's in everything. You know, these are things that you don't understand because of the natural evolution and development of the language. Now, if you just let that sucker free range, like if you don't have error-correcting mechanisms, like let's say the same way that in DNA replication, a significant portion of it is basically parts of it error-correcting mechanisms to make sure that it doesn't go wrong, because going wrong is the norm, and you have to have things that help it not go wrong, and the grammar Nazism could be that inspiration for us to maintain the integrity of our language. Polish that turd. Yeah.
You kind of did it. I just...
Come on, will you give a... You know what you should do at the end? You give me a score. What is
a
the score?
Out of 10?
Out of 10.
I say it's like a 7. 7 or an 8.
Okay.
It's good. It's just... In general, just generally speaking, I don't think I'm sold on you. I think you're still being jerks, and I don't think that they're thinking I'm being a jerk for the future of humanity. And if I can't get away with that, they can't get away with
it. All right. It's true. It would be difficult for me to justify the amount of pettiness that is truly part of it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, right? Every time you're trying to defend something, every time you're trying to polish any turd, you've got to polish the grossest parts of it, the ones that are, say, overwhelmingly represented. The peanut, say, in the turd.
The turd is only as polished as its filthiest nugget.
Right. And the filthiest nuggets are really the true ones because, you know, they're the true stains, really.
I feel like that should be like a t-shirt.
Well, let's not go that far here. We're trying a lot of experimental things.
No, not necessarily for the good atheist. Just have that as a t-shirt.
Sounds gross. I think you'd have a shit smear on it. I don't think anyone wants a t-shirt that's basically a shit smear.
I don't know, man.
It's
so indie. What are you talking about?
I'll tell you what, that's the new fashion. We're going to start a new line of soiled clothing. So.
I think the Salvation Army's beat you to that.
Like, they don't do it right. It's like ripped jeans.
Like,
you don't get them. A for ripped jeans, you pay $300 for me to rip them for you.
And you can get a pre-stained mattress.
Actually, no. That's to be fair, you pay $300 so that some poor kid in Indonesia can rip it for you with his tiny little hands.
Well, that's because those hands know when to stop, right? Otherwise, like, you just rip all the, you'll rip all the way to the seam, and then they just look ridiculous.
Okay, well, did you hear about, by the way, that woman who at Halloween opened up that...
oh, God, yes, there was that letter.
Letter?
Yes, that, like, please help us, and it was been sitting there for, like, 2 years.
That was a tough one.
Yeah, I'm like, please be fake. Please be fake.
Well, and I could try to polish that turd if you want me to polish that turd.
Oh man, dude, you're gonna turn into what is that guy's name? Not Christian Defense League. What is the guy's name who's always defending every horrible thing?
Bill Donahue.
Bill Donahue. You're gonna be like the Bill Donahue of like just everything.
Well, I don't want to polish it to say that to defend it. I want to polish it in a way that, you know what, I realize that this year there's so much pessimism that I would defend the beginning of this year by polishing so many turds that maybe that's the whole thing about the show. Present to me a turd, and I will polish it. And I'll tell you why, because I've been rereading Steven Pinker's Better Angels of Our Nature. And because I've been able to apply it to so much of what I've been working on, I'm retaining so much more of it. I'm starting to really anticipate some of the theories that he's even talking about now. And I'm like, all right, it's getting firm in my mind here. So I can seriously polish some motherfucking turds, because even just listening to his analysis made me bawl my eyes out as to how much amazing shit has really happened all within both our lifetimes and the lifetimes of our parents. It is amazing.
But as sort of a voice for reason, do you really want to become a master of spin?
No, I'm not being a master of spin. All I'm doing is that every once in a while, I think it is necessary for us to put things into perspective. Spin is when you're kind of constantly engaged in the same rhetoric.
Right.
For me, it's just sort of like present the two arguments in a way where it's like, all right, well, here's one side of it. That's the dark side. That's the part saying, well, things are bad, but here's the light side. Because at least then you can make that judgment for yourself. I'm not going to keep adding to it. I just said that's the beginning of the year. You're probably only going to get a few polished then turds.
Oh, yeah. If you want to try to polish that, go for it. Although I'm pretty sure that guy's already dead.
he's probably not doing too well. Okay, well, see, the thing I have to polish is not that I'm trying to excuse the fact that there are horrible working conditions, because obviously I can't do that, and that's not necessary. But, again, we have to try to put things a bit more into a historical context. It's actually amazing that we are outraged, and you have to consider the fact that this is a letter, this is a ship in a bottle that I've become aware of, and that every single time I become aware of this, it's not something that goes unnoticed. If you want to look at the trends of history, you have to look at the ways in which people begin to reject certain cultural values. We're watching that in ourselves, but we're seeing its influence throughout the world, right? Mm-hmm. And because we have new methods of communicating with one another, where nation states used to be the only way for people to communicate, where now we have this new unofficial nation state of humanity that we're all contributing to and sharing our outrage, this at least is the beginning of the dialogue that puts us hopefully into that final phase of our, you know, of our quest to become civilized. You know, the way that we curb those final impulses. You know, Steven Pinker said, history is a foreign nation, right? It seems like alien to us, because the things that they thought were values we deject. They're like, how could those parts of the culture be something that people valued once upon a time, that thought that these were the morally superior views, and now you look at them in disdain? But you realize, of course, you know, it is a build-up to that, and it's not universal. There are still many places that live in different historical nation states, if you want. And China is one of those places, but what we are seeing is that, at least for them, if they can see that it has such a response, that's the beginning of change for them as well. So I polish that term.
I don't know. I think you were closer on the other one.
I could go a little bit further on to sort of like how civilization has really kind of helped curb violence, but
that one doesn't necessarily need too much polishing. I mean, and just in terms of I'm just talking in terms of that one incident. It didn't have so much to do with, like, you know, yes, it's great for that we have, like, this whole sort of one nation of humanity thing going on, but at the same time, the guys are still working in a factory for next to nothing, you know. Yeah. But at least I get my iPhone.
Well, that I definitely feel as though we have to move to a position where we're not as hypocritical as we are now.
Yeah, but I think that's just the drawback of being in the first world, which isn't really a drawback. It's like we get to sit in an ivory tower and, like, judge everybody.
Not just that, is that our perception of the world gets to be sort of poisoned by our own luxury. But at the same time, within that luxury, people realize, well, you know, if there was a world of unlimited wealth, we would all live in that luxury and have no desire to attack one another. And it's not as though that world is impossible for us. We're clever creatures. We can manage ourselves well if we have that fucking courage. But, man, it's going to take some time. But like I said, I mean, if you look at it from the perspective of just how a species seems to evolve more towards cooperation, it always seems to lend more towards it. It's a slow, slow process. You know, it's so slow. I was thinking the other day, like, one of the great mysteries of fucking life is, like, why was there single-celled organisms for so long? Why? Why? Like, it just seemed, the Cambrian explosion is the part where all of a sudden you just have so many different variations compared to the slowness of before. And you're just like, well, what's the main difference? And the main difference is the invention of cooperation for the first time among single-celled like organisms. And that is something that had to play out over a long period of time, because there's no real, you know, the decision-making process here is non-existent. This is just natural forces acting. But it turns out that once you tap into that, once you get one bit of bacteria like mitochondria to work with a single-celled organism, now you have a powerhouse, and now you have all kinds of new possibilities. And what do we notice? Well, we notice groups of these cells forming, working in tandem, even though they're individual cells. Like, you heard about slime molds? You heard about this?
You know, probably I have, but I can't remember. Like,
it made the news rounds for a little while, I think. It was in the news. Slime molds are amazing, probably, is what you heard.
Just now. I think I heard about them on Sci-Factor.
Well, slime molds are interesting because they're just, what they do is they form, they release this chemical, I don't know what it's called, but they form basically this mass that can move to a new location for food, and then they just basically ungroup and then get back to their own sort of like singular cells. That's then when you just have to get shit done, they're just like, okay, it's time for a call to cooperation. And then boom. And that, the reason why they want to understand is that very phenomenon is probably what keeps you sustained in a permanent way. Like, that's kind of freaky. You think about how they just, you know, obviously in some kind of nightmare science fiction world, you
discover I'm just thinking
some
that.
One chemical and you fucking inject in a person, all of a sudden they become just individual cells. That'd be just totally badass, right?
And messed up. And then you wouldn't be judging my Xavier head exploding trick. You'd be like, we need Jeff to blow Jeanette's up.
in this crazy cartoonish world where science is that simple.
I live in that world. The reality gets further and further away from me as time progresses.
I like science when it's understandable. That's what I like.
I like science when it means that I have superpowers and can fly.
Yeah. That would be the choice, flying, really, Jeff?
Well, flying's pretty cool.
Okay, but
I don't know.
Think about the practicalities. First of all, you're not an outdoor type person.
Well, I know that maybe if I flew, I'd go outside more.
All right. Well, there is that possibility. I don't want to discourage you from gaining flight.
Like, you were all like, oh, I'm going to polish the turd until Jeff has a dream. And then it's like,
all right.
Why would you want that? Your dream is stupid.
Hold on, I just want to help you.
Let a man fly.
Can I at least unpolish the dream then? That's the second segment where I shit on people's dreams because I'm really good at it.
Is that what this is? Okay, so you're two.
I'm actually better at shitting on dreams than I am on polishing turds. That's
I have spent many years with you. I know this.
Now, thank you, Jeff.
Like, go ahead. Dump on my dream.
Right. But I'm dumping in the way that saying, like, okay, let's look at the practical reasons of how that would play out physically. Number one, you would be limited in terms of the speed that you could go because, you know, gale force winds and what have you would put a lot of pressure on your body and shit like that. So you won't be able to fly that fast. That's the first thing. Seems like a bit of a problem. So flying really slow. It sounds like floating to me. You have floaty powers? All right.
I could get a jetpack.
All right. The other problem, too, that we have now is that, you know, you're kind of limited as to how high you can go. There's only so much oxygen, so now
I can get oxygen in my jetpack.
Okay, well, is the jetpack what makes you fly? That's not a superpower.
No, it just gives me the speed and the oxygen that you've taken away from me.
So what's even the point of you flying if a jetpack's doing it?
The jetpack's not. The jetpack is accelerating.
I just think you should probably figure out a way to make the jetpack do all the work and not have this whole business of flying and focus on a different superpower now that you have a
pick. What? I can't just start at one. I have to pick one superpower for the rest of my life. I'm
Superman syndrome here where he has
I am multi-class, okay? I am one of those, like, rogue mages that you read about.
You, sir, are weak when you want multi-fucking powers. Pick one, be brave, and say, I can make this one.
No. I'm multi-class Japanese RPG style, okay? Where I do everything perfectly and I'm great.
Oh, right, where there's really no chance that the character runs into any risk whatsoever.
Not at that, not with all his superpowers fully evolved. I've already got the hair for it.
That's one of the really inherent problems of the Japanese narrative. Yeah, lack of vulnerability of their characters.
Well, I mean, they're vulnerable, but you know.
To
I don't know, super dragons.
Even more powerful dragons.
Super mega ultra dragons. They're the worst kind, man.
Yeah.
Because they don't tip.
Until somebody merges with somebody else, and then you need another super quadruple mega.
I'm a strictly solo superpower. I don't do well in groups. I'm like Wolverine, but not like in the X-Men Wolverine, like Wolverine when he's not in the X-Men.
Yeah, but what exactly are you righting any wrongs here? Okay, I'll give you flying since apparently I can't talk you out of it.
Instead,
try to polish that one. So you want it flying, and we'll give you one more. Can we give you one more?
All right, but can that second superpower be have any superpower I want? Can I do the wishing more wishes thing?
No, you cannot. No.
All right.
And you can't wish for the ability to make a machine that gives you more powers either.
Okay, well, I could wish to be Batman.
Wow, you, hey, Batman flies. You're great. You know, you're really imaginative. Thanks for being on the show.
This is a good atheist, not the, like, pick a superpower show. I don't know. Something rad to the max.
Rad to the max. Well, I'm just putting you on the spot here so we can
fucking... Okay, so if I have the power of flight, I can fly around. Yeah. Now, the thing is just because I have a superpower doesn't mean I have to use it for good. I could be selfish with it.
I have you to understand that. Well, that's going to get to my second point. I want you to just pick some powers, and then I want to see how you would express those. I want to explore your super ego, so let's go. What's the other power?
My other power would be to think faster when pressed for ideas. No.
I like that one. Come up with clever ways.
There we go.
To talk your way out of things.
Be wittier.
Yeah, wittier. Perfect. No, okay. Super strength. Is it just going to be like a standard bag of tricks, or do you want something a little bit more creative?
I would like to be... to have also maybe have expert hand-eye coordination. I think that would be a good one.
So you would
then I could have multiple
ninja stars or something like that while you're flying, I guess?
Come on, flying ninjas? You ever heard of that?
Hand-eye coordination.
Now,
what else are you
doing? Now you're just being stupid. Maybe I would like to draw while I'm flying. Have you thought that? Maybe my superpower doesn't have to be like one where I could fly really well.
Here's the thing. I can fly because I'd love to draw there. Why don't you just get a hot air balloon, you stupid idiot? Like, what's the problem?
I have superpowers, but I'm poor.
Obviously, you're not using it well in the first place. You could be cleaning windows, for God's sakes, and probably make a killing.
That's a waste of a talent. Why would I do the job that a pulley could do?
Well, you know what? First of all, because your cost would be so low. A squeegee, a sponge, and your ability to fly. It's pretty cheap, man.
I have to admit that would make a really kick-ass resume. Like, what are your skills? I can fly. Okay.
He's pretty. I think we should give it to the squeegee guy who can fly. Seems like the smartest thing to do. Hard to compete against him.
Yeah. Although actually, if I could fly, I could probably make it better at the post office because then I could be like government salary.
Wait, you're delivering mail?
I could be Hermes, except instead of messengers of gods, messengers of people who don't understand the internet.
See, this is interesting. As we begin to explore the power, we figure out ways in which it can have some mercantile abilities. And the first way is window washing, and the second one is delivering mail, showing how limited our imagination is. We need a 5-year-old kid who could probably fucking clue us in to some of the amazing things that a human could do if they could fly, and we come up with delivering mail. Inventions that already exist that have flying for delivering mail, sir.
Okay. You established from the get-go that apparently I would need to use this power to make a living. So I'm sorry, delivering mail is better than being a squeegee kid. Okay, and
you know what you have Spider-Man syndrome, okay? Spider-Man syndrome is this. Spider-Man is a brilliant inventor who uses gadgets all the time, but who can't figure out a way to make money in a capitalist system. Yeah. He's Spider-Man syndrome.
You just waited just, 2 days into my year and you've already ruined my resolution. No flying, Jeff. No flying.
I said there could be some flying, but I said this could all be solved using technology. freeing up a superpower slot. I was trying to do some favors here.
Yeah, but technology costs money, and I don't think being the son of aristocracy is like a superpower.
Well, you know what? Having the ability to read people's minds right there. Yeah, that's right there.
Oh, I see. This is all just a trap, so you could talk about how awesome it would be to read minds. I see what this was now.
No, I'm just using that as an example, because that's what I would pick. It would solve actually every problem.
Well, not every problem, because would you be able to turn it off? Because, like, what if you could read everybody's mind? Then, like, there would be bound to be some crap that would happen.
Oh, I already figured out a way around that. I use the inverse square law, like, just saying that if you have, like, a big enough mental field, then people would have to step within it, but because of the inverse square law, then it would diminish inversely proportionate to its distance. So, you know, you'd have to still have a range. So you could just stay at home if you don't want to read people's minds, or, you know, have like a really thick lead plating or something. I don't know.
So you're like the Unabomber, but who can read minds?
I didn't say you had to stay in your house. I'm just saying that if you wanted to shut it off, yes,
live in a live in a bunker made out of dilapidated school buses and read people's minds at a distance.
Well, there's probably lots of people who think they can already do that, so that's probably the scary thing right there. Or if they don't think they do, if I explained to them this idea, they probably think that they could. Yeah. That's how human beings are. If we can wish it, we can live it.
And we can crazy it up. We can double down on crazy, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, although every once in a while it seems to kind of work for us. I'll give you a good example, right? Where, you know, somebody says, oh, warp drive from like a science fiction series. That's silly. We won't do that. And all of a sudden there's an article in Scientific American with these two guys saying, oh, we figured out a trick around the initial problem of warp drive. Because they were like, originally they said, yeah, the equations all work. But to warp space, you would need the mass energy of Jupiter. And I'm like, that's a little bit power hungry just to warp space.
Right. But then, if only you had someone who could fly in space with a jar to capture energy. That's how that works, right?
Jar.
Like mason jars full of Jupiter energy.
You've been watching too much Transformers where they put energy into cubes.
Hey. Those are cool, okay?
Energon cubes.
Hey, energon cubes are the shit.
I like how they just, you know, they put oil and they crush it down, which I'm like, okay, I could believe that if you crush it down, maybe you could, you know, increase its heat and turn it into some kind of plasma energy. That's fine. But at the same time, I'm like, why don't you just put a whole bunch of fucking matter in there? It wouldn't matter. If you have that ability, just use rocks.
Are you engaging in a battle of, like, intelligence with the Transformers cartoon show?
No, it's true.
Like, because the Transformers...
I won't pick the science department.
Yeah. I'm like, because Transformers... No, I'm just saying, like, Transformers was there to sell toys. I loved that show.
Get out of here.
I know.
Toys?
I know. It's like...
Typical of you.
Isn't it really? But I was watching, like, I love Transformers, as anybody who knows me knows, but, like, good lord, when I watch it as an adult, I'm like, this is just to get kids to buy shit.
As horrible as that is, let me polish that turd.
All right.
And then
when you're done, you can polish the turd that is the Rock Lords movie.
I don't know what Rock Lords is.
Rock Lords were knockoffs, not knockoffs, but were a side group of Gobots that turned into rocks, and their attacks were, like, rolling around.
Okay. All right. Maybe you can do that, but let me...
I do not know how to do that.
I need to polish the turd of...
Go.
Selling robotic toys... through a cartoon, but it, you know, it has this interesting other side effect that, like the toys themselves, the Japanese manufacturers who made them before the cartoon came out, I forget what the name of the company is, I was researching it. But the designs, like I was looking at the schematics of that. This is an ingenuity in a toy level that is at that point like unprecedented, like in the 1980s. It was amazing.
Oh, they were awesome.
It's like being able to take an object, an everyday mundane object like a car, and give it multiple functions and make it into a robot which people love. I mean, that's just a genius toy.
Yeah, but robot, like, I'm sorry, but Japanese people making robots, it's like, that's what they do.
But that's exactly it, right? That's part of that culture. Transformers, yes, it may be selling a car, you know, that fucking toy. But in the end, what it's selling is the idea of robots. And Japanese people... have bought into that so hard.
Dude, I love robots. I love
their fairs. They had a robot greeter that was programmed to say a number of things and look human, and most people couldn't tell that it wasn't a person. And that was years ago.
Do you remember that robot, that woman, that robot woman that they made that freaks out if you touch her breast? Do you remember that one? Like, this Japanese guy was showing it off, and she's like, please, do not touch me there. And then she just got like, whoa, and she just freaked the hell out. Like, who is this toy being, who is this being marketed to?
This is what the Japanese are doing. They have a fascination for it. And you know what? So much of it could be said to be the ideas that were implanted to them by cynical toy manufacturers.
Oh, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that for a second. I'm just saying that the show itself was little more than a half-hour commercial.
And so what do you give that one? Another set?
The turd polish?
Yeah, the
turd. Well, that was it. That's an easy turd to polish. Oh. So, I mean, that one doesn't require too much effort.
Oh, yeah. Talk about crushing dreams. What about crushing my scores, man?
I didn't realize that this is going to go into your year-end review, and you won't get that raise from the something, the Idea Factory.
Well, exactly. Look, if I subsist, in fact, on kinds of, on notions that are held without any particular reason to hold them, like, for instance, I should support the good atheists.
Yes.
Right, is an idea that, you know, at the end of the day, I can't quite justify rather than all these other equally justifiable things. A person needs to have that initial belief
right.
It's enough, and then to even have so much of a belief is saying he needs a raise, as in more need to participate.
But you're the one who's deciding what you're worth here, right? Like, you're the one who's got the pricing up. I think that we should definitely try to spread the word on the good atheist there, get it out. But at the end of the day, you're the one who decides how much you're gonna charge for this stuff.
That's true. I do set those standards, but it is based on some research. It's not nothing, which is why, like I said, I was doing some market research for the DVD itself, because I don't want to release anything without, you know, some thought put into it.
Understandable. Well, I mean, it is a product, but it is also kind of a form of artistic expression, and at least for my money, I wouldn't want to put anything out that I wasn't proud of either, so.
Right, and that people had sort of, you know, like there were a few kind of reservations that I had, and none of them were echoed in my own market testing. So I realized it's kind of me being too much of me.
Yeah, well, we're our worst critics.
Well, you know, I mean, you have to be when you're very much an independent, you know, worker, because no one's going to be around to breathe down your shoulder and say that line sucked, or that, you know, audio clip sucked, or that sentence sucked.
And your closest audience will be biased because they want to support you.
Exactly. So there's a weird dynamic there where it's like, okay, you need to love me hard and I need to hate myself. Go.
There we go.
And as long as we have that dynamic, everything's going to be fine.
Woo!
Which is why artists are always depressed people.
Well,
you get used to the love, but, you know, you get into comfort with the hate too.
This is like Stockholm Syndrome for friends.
is it what it is? Yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's like, just you become white noise after a while.
Well, who becomes white noise?
The critique. I was just saying, as a joke, because you're the dream destroyer.
Right. Well, that's true, I guess. I suppose the critique itself would also lose some credibility. You know what? Here's the balance, right?
At first,
people really will love you, admire you, and give you a lot of self-confidence. And that self-confidence will make you be very, very critical of your work, which will bring down your self-confidence. But to a point where all of a sudden this now lessened person that's criticizing your work is really no one who has any business criticizing anyways, so you feel better about yourself, and then you start releasing work because you're no longer in your stupid headspace fighting with yourself, and people like it, and they boost your ego, and then the cycle goes on.
Yeah, that could go on forever.
I just described the artistic cycle for everybody. Fun.
There we go. Yep, it's basically just doubt and reassurance and doubt and then egomania and then getting taken down a peg and then doubt.
Oh, yeah. And those are always that's
Oh, eventually there'll be that one person who's not afraid to call you on your shit after you get a little bit cocky, and they're just going to be like, bam, cut you in the kneecaps and
they know they know just enough about you.
Yeah,
that everything they will say are things that you already thought of yourself.
It's almost as if they could read minds.
Oh my goodness! But
see how I brought that around.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, but here's the crazy thing, though. There are some people that we could characterize as mind readers. These are people that are way more in tune with the kinds of ways that individuals actually give information about themselves.
Like indigo children.
No, not that way.
Come on, magic kids.
No.
In the clutches of really creepy psychics.
Overwhelmingly, the only people who are actually really good at that are spies. Spies are actually trained to read your micro-expressions, and while it's not an exact science, we'll probably say, in combination with being able to understand, you know, basic stereotypes about people, because we're all fucking ridiculous stereotype one way or another now, right. There's just so many people. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but at the end of the day, we are part of the same species, and we'll have some tells. You know,
oh, absolutely. I mean? There will always be that interesting range, right? That's why even though you can be stereotypical in a particular way, you know, right. Because you have every single human being both is and isn't the perfect representation of the human race. There is no seminal human. Right? We are all carriers of the same humanness, so therefore are all the best representatives and the worst representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's a bit liberating at the same time. Right?
There's it's no pressure on you to set an example. Woo! I am off the hook.
Genetically speaking, yes, you are mostly off the hook. Although
I do like that. That's like
I polished that one, turd. Yeah,
I'm not. I give that a 9. I'm like, I'm not a role model.
Okay, but hold on. I gotta sort of crush that. I don't need to do nothing part now.
Don't need to do anything. See, I just
I gotta bring that one down just then. Because you know that was an implicit statement about our genetics. But at the same time, we have to admit that the change in our species, even the evolution of our species, isn't only driven by those mechanisms anymore. In fact, I would say that they're more culturally driven, which is why we are still evolving as a species and changing as a species. So it is our duty and responsibility to still take part in that, because I think that in a way, each human individual, despite being themselves stereotyped, whatever that bit of uniqueness that makes you, may have the potential of really striking the right chords and making the significant change in that, you know, mutating culture, that you do make a significant difference, that you are, you know, that is a necessary role for you. Otherwise, there are forces that try to do something very much opposite and have different, you know, different visions for what a perfect human life is, and they may not be compatible with yours, as many people today live in those kinds of environments. It's like, yeah, we're still figuring it out, although I believe we do keep getting better.
I think so. It's a gradual increase, and yeah, I guess so.
Well, especially if you just only go back like a few hundred years, where you have to have a book telling people not to basically wipe their noses on tablecloths, not to sort of point knives at people, you know, and stab them. Just basic etiquette of saying, stop acting like children without impulse control.
Just right? Don't be a dick. Stop being a dick.
We realized, I think, at some point that it is somewhat necessary to create a form of impulse control, because just unleashed, we're like children. And if you've ever been around children, you realize they're very psychotic.
A little, yeah. I think they're more unpredictable than psychotic.
No, they would range as psychotic if their behavior was human, because of the amount of time they use violence to solve problems.
Okay, I guess.
They have most of the hallmarks of being a psychopath, of lack of empathy being another one there, because they don't have that part of their brain developed just yet. But yeah, they're acting like psychopaths, and then you realize that, you know, because those impulses in us are really strong, it's almost like that horrible, well, it's almost like Vulcans in Star Trek, where they try to suppress their emotions and try to be rational, and it turns out that you can be rational, or you can be emotional, or empathetical. But having both at the same time is, you can't. They're somewhat incompatible. And you realize that, look, we need more rationality, because we know that many of the elements of us that are kind of animalistic are violent. Like if you just let impulse control go wild, then the murder rate would go up by like 100 times. And that's just the reality of human beings. We do need some of that impulse control. But I think that if it's geared towards something, a philosophy that is always, you know, keeps empathy in mind, like that we're not robots, right? We're not always have the switch of rationality. We just know that the best elements of ourselves is what make our philosophies, and the parts of it that we deject, that we just don't like anymore, the old misogyny, the old bigotry, the old homophobia, all of those things which are repellent to us now, will affect the cultures of the future and the mores of those people too, where even some of the things that we do now may look barbaric, and we'll have to accept that. We'll have to fucking move on, and we'll be the fucking grandpa that can't, you know, accept the
be on the wrong side of history.
Be on the wrong motherfucking side of history. Yeah, and accept that. Put ourselves on the motherfucking ice floe.
I don't want to think about that. I like, what am I ignorant of? Like, or not ignorant of, but what am I bigoted against?
I think it would be mostly that they would just be surprised and angry at the fact that, say, 900 million people are currently starving.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody's okay. Well, I guess some people are okay, but I'm like, I'm not okay with that. I'm like, well, I'm starving.
There could be plenty of testimonials to that effect, and maybe that seems stirring to us. But you don't get to judge history. They do. And I think at all that, they would still see this a hollow fucking explanation. That is BS, just comforting shit. That's probably going to be their judgment on us, and I think they're going to be right. I think they have to reject our complacency. That will be their challenge, to care more than we did. That's what we have to raise into this world, even more caring fucking individuals, not less. I did crush everybody's dream right there. Can I?
You did. I was about to say, like, dude, you're like turd polishing, and then now you're just like.
But it's not the end of the show. I can keep going. I can switch it. I can totally save this. Do you want me to save this?
I think you should, though. We might need to wrap it up a bit soon, though, that I do have.
Why don't I save this, and then we can wrap it up like that?
Okay. It's
cool. A pretty decent show. And
yeah, it's been about an hour. So.
It's been about an hour. So let me polish that turd.
All right. Leave us on a high note to start the year.
A high note, because I want you to do a little bit of an empathy exercise yourself. All right? Just the same fact that we kind of tried to do an empathy exercise with the people from the future. How may they judge us? Right?
Right.
I'm asking you to put yourself in the shoes of someone who's living right after the Second World War. This is the 1950s, or maybe even a little bit before. And I come from the future, okay? And I come to this person, I'm like, I'm going to tell you what your future is going to be like. And in this future, your fear of, like, nuclear Armageddon will be unjustified. And there will not be one nuclear bomb blasted after the war. That the East and West Berlin countries, Germany, which used to be feared as an aggressive nation, would suddenly become so pacifist that they outlaw games like Risk because it has conquering in it. You know? And for that to all happen where young people themselves would be obliterating those walls, and again, no one had been shot during that. That it would have been the time where no nation states themselves would go to war for a sustained period of almost 70 years. And that there would be fewer wars than there had ever been in the history of mankind. And that this would have been a progression, that you could track this. That in a world where you had a good chance of a family member dying in some kind of conflict now seemed almost impossible. And all of that, maybe it doesn't have all the pretty kind of pictures where, you know, starvation has been eliminated. There are no more wars and so on and so forth. Because I don't come from that future yet. But if I was to trace our future based on at least that short period of time, and again, it is short. I can't make that statement and I can't be implicit about it, but I can tell you that there's a lot of hope because it does seem to be the way that we're heading. Just because if we make an assessment of our character now in our regard for violence, I find it hard to believe that we would really accept violence the same way that we did, because we just don't. The evidence is that we don't. We are so reviled about it, like no time in our species, that I even wonder how that might change us physically as a species. You know that a species like the bonobos, for instance, which are kind of the monkeys that have lots of sex compared to the chimps, which are the world.
Right. I think that's the bonobo is just like, I think everybody knows what those are.
But no, the sex monkeys.
Yeah. The humpy monkeys.
The humpy monkeys have more juvenile and effeminate features. And that led to a kind of physical change. And, you know, if you look at human beings, we kind of have those features ourselves. There is some case to be made that we, you know, our obsession with cuteness grows. And these are good things. These will actually pacify us and lead to what I think will be a completely different type of civilization that we haven't even thought of. The same way that people who just invented agriculture couldn't imagine the types of civilization they were building and what the long-term view of history would be on them. So did I polish that turd?
You did.
All right, good.
Sorry?
You feel better now? You're not going to go fucking, like, jump off a cliff because Jacob said that?
Well, I can't jump off a cliff because I can't fly. So, no. But
you had a jetpack.
If I had a jetpack. Like that jetpack in Arrested Development.
I love that jetpack.
The training video where everyone's crashing into walls. Just blowing up.
In Japanese, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Arrested Development. See, that's how you end the show on a good note, is you bring up Arrested Development.
I thought I ended it on a good note by giving people the impression that they were going to basically build the world of Star Trek. Like, I don't know. That's not good enough for you?
It's just Star Trek? I'm sorry, Arrested Development's better than Star Trek.
Oh. I'm going to have to take you to task one day on that. Look, both shows, but, you know, one makes me laugh and the other sort of, like, clenches at my heart.
I have to admit, I've been watching The Next Generation with my boyfriend, and it's, I've been enjoying it.
Okay, let me tell you something. You watch The Inner Light, and then we'll talk.
All right, The Inner Light, which season is that?
That is season 5, I believe, near the end of season 5. So, The Inner Light, and then you come back to me, because I had, my eyes were sore. Let's just say that.
Yeah, but you like cry at everything.
It's true. Like, I'm a big fucking...
The
exercises have become too real to me. That's the problem. I've done them too much, and now I'm a big sobbing vagina.
See, my heart's a big callus, so...
You are a big callus.
But yeah, well,
I pick times where I'm nice and emotional. And then the rest of the time, I'd just be like, let's turn on robot face. And let's go out the day, and I'll feel vindicated that at least I still have a heart. And then everything else that I'm doing will seem to be somehow justified.
Alright, I'll give it to you.
I'm trying to polish my own turd here, alright?
That's a good way to get disease.
And you know what, I think 2013 is all of us trying to polish, you know, old turds and seeing things in new light, but realizing that, you know, like we said before, sometimes it's trying to polish the worst of that turd, and you realize, well, the rest of it ain't so bad.
Yeah, but some of it's not worth polishing.
Yeah, that's the thing about the New Year's. Get the worst shit out of the way first.
There you go.
It's the hardest part, but it's also going to feel like a huge weight is lifted off your shoulder. That's my advice for 2013.
Plus, I mean, as far as personal movement goes, like, I don't usually, like, not the first few months of the year are throwaway months anyway. You got to lose your holiday weight. You know, you got to get back into the swing of, like, your work week and, you know, blah-de-blah.
The fact that there's not a lot of sunshine, and it's a bit depressing whatever.
Oh, man, is it ever. But
well, at least in the Western Hemisphere. Fucking Southern Hemisphere, and they got all the sun.
Yeah, but, you know.
You know, there's no landmass there. They're hardly producing any power.
I didn't know that.
Well, actually, it's interesting to note that there's a certain amount of, there are different productions of CO2 and oxygen times during different periods of the season, because a significant portion, something like 78 or more percent of the landmass is in the Northern Hemisphere.
Okay.
So, you know, because there's like portions of South America, portions of China, and like the smaller portion of Africa that's in that port, you know, that part. But generally speaking, like, you know, Australia and the rest of it is just a lot of fucking blue ocean.
That's true.
So they don't generate as much quote-unquote power from plants and stuff like that, sucking all that radiation. It goes into probably plankton, blah, 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 or who knows what. I don't know. It's all speculation. I'm not a scientist.
We're like cheerleaders for science.
More like a cheerleader who spends like 3 or 4 hours, like a day, reading all kinds of weird stuff about new science stuff and what's happening. Like just...
Well, that's
the ultimate one. Yeah.
There you go. I don't get that. I don't have that luxury because I've got a nasty full-time job that's soul-crushing. But
but you're going to polish that turd, right?
Fuck no. I'm going to go part-time when I move in with my boyfriend.
But see, there you go. You polished your own life turd. You didn't have
to polish your life turd. And isn't that a Deepak Chopra book?
No, it's my new self-help book that I'm going to release.
Polish your life turd.
I'm going to make...
Yeah, I bet you can get something.
And that's what I'm going to release.
I think you can get someone to buy that.
Somebody out there. Yeah. Somebody out there. I just put in key search for sucker.
There we go.
If
you could get someone to narrate it with a British accent, it's like, I knew I was running into trouble. That's when I took it upon myself to polish my turd.
With a British accent, you can almost make me question evolution. That's what they thought, at least the Discovery Institute.
Oh, God, that guy. Ken Ham.
No, not Ken Ham. It's just that they have various documentaries where they have people with either British voices or, you know.
I think I can see Asian, here.
education-y sounding voices.
Yeah, like I think I can see the air quotes all the way over here in Montreal from documentary.
It went whoosh.
Yeah, like Aurora Borealis in air quotes.
That's my superpower, to make supersonic
supersonic sarcasm.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you know what? I think that superpower would actually benefit the world. But I already polished the turd at the beginning to show how humor saves.
You don't want to over-polish a turd.
I don't want to over-polish.
No, that is just blinding turd.
Then you're getting shit everywhere.
There you go.
And with that delightful imagery, we wrap up this experimental podcast. I'd like to thank everyone who helped do the market testing, by the way. You guys were really helpful. Give me a bit of a second wind to put in the last third of the work that's necessary to finish this DVD. It can get hard, you know, when you just when you're like, I hate certain aspects of it, but then you realize that that's just you.
Yeah. Well, also you're doing pretty much everything yourself, which is probably overwhelming.
Yeah, that's true. It can. Well, I mean, I'm not doing everything myself. For instance, I have a lot of support from Tammy, my editor, so she helped. Not just edit it, but every once in a while, if I'm want to feel sorry for myself, definitely as someone that just listens. So I'm sure that one day she'll write a tell-all book about how much of
the scandal.
Yeah, scandal. Right, exactly. But you know, if you want to stay in the media, you got to keep things interesting.
There we go.
It'll be her job to do that once I'm disgraced. It's a kind of sex.
I like that you're like planning ahead for this.
No, I'm just, you know, like I said, I can't make any future decisions for future Jake, but the future can be so overwhelmingly unpredictable that you just have to be prepared for every contingency.
All right, including
sex scandals and tell-all books.
I think you can avoid the latter if you avoid, like, you'll avoid the latter by avoiding the former.
Right. Okay. Good choice.
Don't involve yourself in sex scandals and you'll be okay.
Remember, maybe in the future they'll think that sex scandals are really, really kind of silly.
I think, I already think that we kind of do. Like, it's just like.
We definitely do, yeah.
Well, I know I do. I'm like, I don't care what consenting adults do. I feel bad if there are kids involved, but whatever.
Yeah, I just feel like the overreaction is actually makes everything worse, really, at this point. I think we all just kind of found a way to balance this whole, hey, we have these animal instincts that we want to just do all and be crazy and be, we don't want to subject other people to that shit.
There we go.
We found that nice compromise where people are pretty much consenting adults in private, cubed off rooms, hopefully with some soundproofing.
There we go. Or just loud music.
Or loud music, and pretty much, you know, there's a couple of things on that list where I'd be like, whoa, but generally speaking, do what the fuck you want.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that I'm like, whoa for me, but, well, not whoa for me, oh, whoa for me, but, no, like, I would be like, okay, I'm not into that, but I don't, if you're into it, whatever, if I just.
Well, I might be whoa at the point where let's say a person who really is overdoing it may in fact be trying to, you know, it might be masking something else. You know, there's always the possibility that a person who's trying something and says that they're consenting is really just unknowingly being not forced into it, but isn't as willing a participant as they may think, and maybe forcing an image on themselves that may not be really coincide with reality. So that's my only woe. I'm like, again, did you really think about your future self and how you feel about everything that you're doing right now? Just keep that in mind. That's all. Think about it. Just make sure that you think he'd be happy and set. And be like, you know what? I did all right. You know, if you have that moment, be like, am I going to be like, should I have done that? Should I have really done that? I don't want really those moments. I don't like that gamble. Like usually that's a disaster for I'm trying to reverse talk myself into not doing something.
You mean a midlife crisis?
Yeah, something like that, probably. Yeah midlife
crisis. That's what it sounds like. It's like, I'm like, man, there's so much crazy debauchery I would love to get into, but now I'm in a freaking relationship. Damn it. Why do I have to be committed and, like, happy? God damn it.
You know what? It is life that will always desire that which we don't have, because when we have it, it's totally cheapened and we never appreciate it and we suck. Ah, shit, downer. Damn. But what? That just goes to show how much good stuff there is that you take for granted. Yes. All right.
All right. Okay. So there we go. Let's stop it now before it gets out of control.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for being a contributing member. And, again, my apologies for the sound thing. I think I might be having some issues with my computer. So hopefully I can actually get that fixed. Otherwise, I'll get back to you on that one. We may have a bit of a problem on our hands. But we're going to be crossing our fingers, hoping that Jakey can fix his technical problems.
There we go. We're pulling for you, Jacob.
Thank you. I know that I have lots of people on my team. With that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I am Jeffrey Jones.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.
Cheers.